emporiums of pleasure, exploding from dusk to dawn with the way-out craze of the topless. Publications such as Life, Playboy, and Esquire have documented the topless, the phrase and the craze that is changing the mood and the mores of people everywhere. With movement, way-out wild movement. Here, go-go girls, in and out of their environment, will be revealed to you in scenes that can only be summarized as a swinging tribute to unrestrained female anatomy. Fantastic women, fantastic dances, featuring the world's loveliest buxotics. Yes, for the very first time, you will hear actual on-the-spot recorded tapes consisting of sensitive comments and opinions by the very topless dancers wildly gyrating before your eyes. Pearls of wisdom based upon guarded personal experiences, all played against a backdrop of tempestuous, soul-stirring rock and roll music. Enough of this palaver. Let's get the show on the road.
Okay, you've got a brand new show here with the preacher, and I've got the one and only El Nino, DJ, rock star, promoter.
Oh my God.
And whatever else you are. The audience claps, yeah.
I think I should clap for that introduction.
Everyone's clapping. And we've got the lovely... You want to say anything? No, she's shy.
Hello.
Lady Kamikaze, all the way from Japan. And I believe you're Nino's wife. So if correct me if I'm totally wrong. You laughing? Yeah, she's not. She's shy. Maybe we'll
she's
get
denying
something.
All charges, man. I can't believe it.
Yeah, maybe we'll get something a little bit later in the show, and you might say something to the Japanese audience. So. But we do have a Japanese audience out there. Well, Nino, your history's a long one. You've been around forever. Everyone knows you. Yeah, you're a big time promoter in the rocking scene. I say the rocking scene because I think. What you play at your clubs is a bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a real melting pot, really.
And it's not just one genre, one particular style. So it's,
No. I've been around too long to have one style.
I think it's important. I think it's really, really important that people do not just have that one style and that one sound that they listen to. If it's rocking, play it. You
that's
know?
It. If it's got a groove, man, you just got to go with it.
That's it.
You
know, that's it.
And that's
definitely
how it is.
And so you run a few clubs in London, and you do lots of clubs you have a thing at the Rhythm Riot, don't you?
We've got a room at the Rhythm Riot, you know, which is great. We've been doing that like 4 years now. This is the fifth year this year, and it's kind of cool because it gives like the audience an alternative room rather than playing like the mainstream kind of R&B jump and kind of jivey stuff. We kind of go more for the hardcore sort of unknown stuff, really, but thrown in with some kind of sin and grind, really.
And for the people who don't know you, I mean, you run Lady Luck Club, and Lady Luck Club is, you can find out about Lady Club. I'll say that again.
It's always ladies, mate. They're just getting to you.
Too many ladies, baby. No, the Lady Luck Club is ladyluckclub.com or .co.uk?
It's .co.uk, ladyluckclub.co.uk. On that website, you can pretty much catch... all the kind of links to what I do and what I'm up to and where I am and, if you take it from there, really.
And how long's Lady Luck Club?
We're in our ninth year now, which is kind of amazing, really, for...
Wow.
I think, for me, anyway, because, you know, I've been doing this, like, 25-odd years and it was...
8 years, maybe.
No, we're in our ninth year.
Oh, you're in
this,
your ninth
year. Yeah, this is going to be the ninth year, so at some point this year, I think end of the year.
And I noticed last year you started another club, and what was that?
No, we didn't start another club.
Oh, has it always been going?
No, we got the Black Cotton Club, which...
That was it,
started,
Black Cotton
that
Club.
Was three, that's 3 years old now, isn't it?
It's about
in May, it's 3 years old.
Wow.
And it's kind of a sister to Lady Luck, really, in a vibe, but musically it's actually... It's kind of the real roots of rock and roll in a way.
Yeah, more of a sort of 20s, 30s
style. It's 20s, 30s, up to the kind of late 40s where before it became rock and roll. And, you know, all the DJs play 78s and it's, you know, you get the cracks, snackle and pop.
I know it's that, and you've got some 78 playing decks down there.
Of course, yeah.
Especially imported, none of this Technique's rubbish.
Well, I don't know, man, you know, technology's good, you know, if it works, it works.
That's true. That's true. So getting on to records, you know, I know you got a few CDs out on the club label. So what are we going to start with? What track have you thought about? What track?
Well, to be honest, I think I'm going to open up with a classic, really, because you know, this was like back in my sort of Teddy Boy days. I now show my age.
Oh well, we'll talk about your age just after the track. Okay. I think we'll go into that.
Well, I want to go for a classic, and I think I've just got to go for Jungle Rock, which, you know, it's got to be an all-time bopper, isn't it? Really.
Yeah, it is a definite classic. Didn't Jungle Rock get somewhere in the charts?
It got in the charts.
Into the British charts in the 70s.
In the 70s, it got into the charts, and it goes to show that rock and roll is still alive.
There you go. Well, here we go, Jungle Rock.
From the Lady Luck CD, Volume 1.
Just the other night, oh, well, I heard a make a rumble and I thought it was a fight. Oh, well, I stood and listened and began to move my feet. It was a jungle drummer doing a knock up beat. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. 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 A knock that beat and I had to move my feet. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. Oh, well, I moved a little closer just to get a better view. I saw a chip and a monkey, yeah, I done a Susie Q. Oh, well, a geeter and a hippo was a doing a bop. Oh, while a great old baker fog, I was a making me pop. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. 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 I knocked out feet and I had to move my feet. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. Bunny hug. And all the grizzly bear was a cutting the rug. Oh, well, a camel was a cheetah bugging with a kangaroo. And the elephant a moo with a ring ding. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. 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 I knocked their feet and I had them in my feet. It was a jungle, 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 jungle rock. A jungle, 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 jungle rock. A jungle, 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 jungle rock.
Wow, what an energetic song that is, isn't it? Jungle Rock.
You can't beat that. That's
fantastic track.
That is a classic. I mean, that reminds me of my first pair of creepers, man.
The first pair of creepers.
It does. You know, that is it. That was the
so,
one.
So, talking about your age, how do you want to reveal your age?
Well, I'm about 145, but...
When did you start rocking in that sense?
Well, I hate to use the term rocking, but let's say, when did I kind of discover good music?
The rhythm.
Yeah, the beat.
Yeah.
I guess, really, it started back at home, around 10, 11 years old with my parents' records, really. And I used to drive them mad playing these 45s, and I used to hide them in the house trying to stop me from playing them. And I always used to find them under clothes, in cupboards, under the carpet. And it was all kind of like I must have just drive them mad.
So when was it, you're a teenager, and think about when you actually start going out clubbing, you know, when did you start going to clubs?
The first club I ever went to that played rock and roll, should we say, and it was a place called the Three Jacks. And funny enough, Paul Hansel was there. Although I didn't know him, but we went to the same club.
For those who don't know him, he's in a band called Number 9.
And a great band at that as well. And it was a kind of a club where it was a youth club, really, in the church. And and the DJs would play three soul numbers. So you're looking at about 1977, 78. And then they'd play three rock and roll numbers, and all the teddy boys used to bop. And all I remember was the floor shaking with all the big creepers, man. It was just amazing.
Boom, boom.
It was like it was stomping.
What else did you go into the city? You know, in the '70s, there were a few other places, well, like the Lyceum. Did you ever go?
I went to the Lyceum only for the Buddy Holly anniversary thing they did. I think Billy Fury was one of the compares there, and.
And just for everyone to get a gist of it all, I mean, the rocking scene, or really not really a rocking scene at that time, it was more of a teddy boy.
It was a teddy boy scene, because you had the Royalty. The Royalty was really, I would
that
say...
That was for probably me, the mecca venue for the
to me, the Royalty was the first proper all-night rock and roll club, and I used to go in there, and there's all these guys with, you know, like, long drapes, frilly shirts with razor blades probably sewn in somewhere, and, you know, the vibe was absolutely amazing. The music was great. They were playing stuff I've never heard of. It was just kind of a mecca for anybody into rock and roll really at the time, and I was like, what, I don't know, 13, you know, something like
that's a young age, 13, thrown in at the deep.
Well, I just about got in, I can assure you, you know, and I really was not in the forefront in those days. I was in the background.
So you got into it. We're looking at what, late 70s here?
I guess about 78, 79 really, because I remember the first Caster, and the first Caster, there was a competition at the Royalty for the first Caster weekend, and it was a singing competition. And again, going back to Paul Hansel, he entered, and a guy called Tony, and he sang Old Black Joe, and I think Paul sang an Elvis number, and they both drew, and they both got a free weekend pass to the first Caster weekend there.
Wow.
So, you know, we are talking way back now.
Yeah, don't Google that, guys, or girls, for that matter. Caster weekends, Caster rock and roll weekends.
Yeah, I didn't go. I couldn't afford it. You know, I was not even just about a teenager then. And then from there, you know, really, after the Royalty, the next club that I really discovered that was breaking away from the, should we say, teddy boy scene at the time, is a club called Bumbles. And when I walked into Bumbles, it was an amazing thing, because I kind of just gone through this kind of like Edwardian, like very British sort of surreal kind of biker thing. And then I went into Bumbles, and everyone was kind of dressed American. You know, everyone had like peg pants, two-tone shoes and gab jackets. And
it was definitely a change. And I mean, in the late 70s, early 80s, the change happened. And people started to move away from that teddy boy scene even though it was still there.
It was still there. Well, there was a bit of a mix at one point. But what really, you know, drew me to it was at the Royalty, they brought over Matt Curtis. And that was his first gig in England, as far as I know. And
great artist.
Oh, fantastic, man. You know, I feel like I'm granddad's rocking here. But anyway, you know, Matt Curtis, and then they brought out all these albums with Charlie Feathers and George Jones. And then this word rockabilly appeared out of nowhere, like rockabilly rules okay.
For me personally, in the early 80s, rockabillies to me were more sort of people wearing bleached jeans and cut off rebel flag t-shirts.
That was a bit later though, I think.
Yeah, I suppose that was probably later, about 1986, 85.
Yeah, because you had the influence of psychobilly then, didn't you?
Yeah, and it was very much the bleach hair thing.
Yeah, the flat tops was really popular, wasn't it? Bleach flat tops.
And the trendy scene of the early 80s was definitely an influence to that.
Yeah, it kind of went mainstream in a way, in a look, you know, bleached jeans, donkey jackets.
Well, you only have to look at, And Phil Dirtbox, if you ever listen to this, please, I must apologise now. If you only have to look at, like, the Dirtbox Club, and you look at the clubs of that period from, you know, that early 83, 84 period, the trendy clubs out there, a lot of people were dressing rocking.
Well, they were dressing rock. I mean, you had the Mud Club. That was another example, very similar to Philip Salon, you know, which was, again, you had, like, I think the people from the rockabilly scene, or the scene that I kind of, I say I was part of, or still am in a way, they kind of ventured out to other clubs not playing rockabilly. They were more the adventurous kind of crowd. You know, there was Jamie, and there was a few.
No, I admit it. I used to go to the Mud Club. I used to go to Dirtbox.
Exactly.
I used to go to the Dirtbox.
But, you know, that's
weekend.
What widens your horizons. You know, you don't want to lock yourself in the box.
Oh, no, definitely not. Not about locking in.
And
the
when
box.
You're in a teenager, you know, you want to take it all in. You know, you want to experiment and you want to see
what's
going on.
So we're
going to
play a record now.
Are we going to play a record now?
We're going to play a record. Oh, cool. And we're going to talk a bit more about this in a bit. So think about a record we're going to play. And I probably haven't got it because we were going to play off the Lady Luck CDs.
Well, no,
tonight.
We're going to play off the Lady Luck CDs tonight.
Are we?
Tonight.
Are
yeah.
we still going to play that?
Yeah, I think okay. we will. We're going to stick to. I'm going to throw a kind of different genres of what the CD and what the club is about, rather than.
Okay.
And we started with the rockabilly thing. And I think now we should switch to a blues thing, really. So what we're going to do, I think we're going to go for, let's go for Geronimo Rock and Roll.
What, Geronimo Rock and Roll?
Yeah, that's the one.
You know, that Indian one. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. By Jerry McCann, you know, on the XLO label. One of my favourites.
What a great label is the XLO label.
Yeah, it's a hit and miss label, though.
It is, I agree.
You know, because there's a lot of crap on there as well. I hate to say that. But
don't tell everyone that. But, go out and buy an XLO label.
Yeah, but, you know, Jerry McCann, man, he is punk rock blues of his day. He is the man. That's right, definitely.
We just had a pizza with.
I've just had orgasms, man.
No, can't say orgasms.
Sorry. This is a non-X-rated show. Yes. Sorry, Mr. Preacher. Please.
I'm the preacher.
Please.
I'm not religious, I'm just the preacher.
I will confess to you later.
Seriously. We just had a lovely pizza then. We had some Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola, who's not our sponsor.
With no rum.
With no rum. Ladies in the background doing their thing. We got the giggles. We got the giggles going down. Oh dear. Ladies in the background giggling. Are they naked?
No. They will be soon. Watch out. It's Lady Luck.
Okay, let's get serious now.
Okay.
So Nino.
Yeah.
So Nino, after that little outburst there from the women
in our
lives.
Okay.
We talked about the early days, while we were listening to the track and having a pizza. Oh, I need to get a bit of jalapeno in the back.
Do you want a toothpick, mate? Yeah.
No, I'm all right. Okay. I'm all right. But ooh, that's hot. We were talking about the trendy scene of the early '80s, and I know. And we talked. We left off with Bumbles and that, and I remember getting my first car at Bumbles, and There was an Indian rockabilly guy.
Yeah.
He was either Indian or from Mauritius or something.
Okay.
And he had the Vauxhall Wyvern 1954, matte black, red leather seats, big chrome strips.
The E-Series one, isn't it? It's the E-Series of the 54, isn't it?
I can't remember what it was.
Like ball nose.
But anyway, I was just in love with this car. It turned up outside Bumbles and I was going, do you want to sell your car, mate? Do you want to sell your car? And
I couldn't drive then. What are you talking about? I was getting the buses.
Well, I was dispatch riding at the time in London, but, you know, we all had to have a job.
Yeah.
But this car, it just drove me mad outside Bumbles. And every time I'd go to Bumbles, it would have the car there. And I was going, and I can't remember his name. It was either Tony or Chris or something like that. And I said to him, I've got to buy a car, sell me a car. And I saved up for weeks and I had the money.
And then he sold it before you can buy it?
No, he let me buy it.
No.
He let me buy it. I went round to his house and it was just amazing. It was near Westbourne Grove.
Wow.
And he had the car outside and it was all ready. He took me round it and I was like, oh my God, this is my first car. And I bought the car, £500.
Wow, that's
brilliant.
I was like,
wow, this is... I was just...
Well, you know, it's kind of weird because...
Refrigerator, dashboard, old valve radio in it.
Did it work? Did it drive?
Yeah, it did go. Everything worked.
But, you know, actually, talk about cars, because Bumbles was one of the first times that I saw a club where outside it was full of 50s cars. And it was the first time I actually saw, like, American cars pull up. You know, it was kind of unheard of.
It was definitely one of the clubs where cars used to go. And that's probably a big thing that the scene lacks at
it
this
actually
point.
It's non-existent today, which is a real shame, because I remember going to the Sunset Club and that whole road used to be full of cars and all sorts, you know, from like kind of 30s hot rods to kind of 50s standards to kind of 60s muscle cars. And, you know, I love old cars. You know, I've always had old cars myself. So...
Well,
you know, it's part of it, really.
And for those who can't imagine Bumbles, I mean, if you listen to the Mouse interview, we talk a bit about Bumbles.
Yeah,
we
the
infamous 50s Flash.
Well, 50s Flash, I've got to say, you know, bless him, he was one of the first DJs that kind of broke away from just rock and roll, because he was the first guy that I saw or heard, I should say, play.
I mean, I remember 50s Flash wearing... He used to wear drapes and like...
Well, he did. He was still a teddy boy. Yeah, he was still a teddy boy visually, but musically...
But he brought something new, didn't he?
Well, he started to bring things in, like some big band stuff. He played like, you know, like Les Brown. He played like Bob Crosby, you know...
A lot of R&B stuff.
Yeah. But not
mixed in with rockabilly.
With rock and roll, rockabilly.
Rock and roll.
A bit of crew. He used to have an erection section, which was like just slow records, which was brilliant. I remember getting hard ons with all the girls down there.
No, can't say that.
Yes, I can. It's rock and roll.
No, but he brought some great stuff.
He did.
Yeah, there was.
You know, jokes all aside. But...
I mean, things like. I know people don't particularly like this record now, but 41 Men in the Telephone Box.
And
Around the Island.
Four Top Hatters or whatever it's called.
And 2164.
Yeah. Destination 20,000, whatever it's called.
Around the Island. I'm getting totally mixed up here. Totally
that kind of like pop doo-wop, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, pop doo-wop. And there were a lot of doo-wop jobs.
Yeah, there a lot of pop... Well, the thing is that there is... At the time, you know, I was really young. And, I mean, obviously, this guy was playing what was accessible. Because don't forget, we didn't have any internet. We didn't have mobile phones. There was no microwaves, right? There was none of that crap. So, basically, no microwaves at the time.
Man.
We're talking about pre-microwave era.
Pre-microwave.
Okay? So, you know, at the time, you know, for somebody to have anything on those lines record-wise, the guy's been hunting. You know, he's been digging deep. He's been travelling to find those records. And as much as we might even think now they're a bit kind of, well, you know, a bit poppy and whatever, a bit cheesy. But at the time, they were new and fresh. Because I was used to kind of jungle rock all night.
I mean, Mouse was saying to me, he used to travel up from South London. He was a South London boy.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And he used to travel up to Bumbles just to see the infamous 50s Flash.
Well, I remember the first time I met Mouse was... I think, let me see, I was 17.
Didn't you dye your hair?
Oh, me?
Didn't you have like a streak of white in your hair?
No, that was just sticking my hand in the socket and it kind of like... No, but
you were saying Mouse.
Like, well, I met Mouse when I was 17. You know, he came to one of my first gigs. Actually, he came to my first gig.
For those who don't know Mouse.
Mouse is the rocking DJ of London town. Dig you?
Well, Space Cadet.
I tell you what, you know, Mouse. You know,
we're not here to talk about Mouse.
Okay,
we're
okay.
About
Mouse.
El Nino.
Thumbs up. Well, okay, I'll tell you my influences really started back in the day of Hollywood musicals. Because Hollywood musicals was what we used to grow up on.
Yeah.
And before I knew what rock and roll was.
Sunday afternoon.
That's right.
Sunday afternoon, that's mum
right.
and dad.
Yeah, black and white movies.
Black and white movie.
You know, they
BBC
Fred
Two.
Astaire and all
BBC Two.
A bit of jazz in the background, yeah. And you think, who are these guys? You know,
yeah.
And they used
Fred
to tap
Astaire,
dance.
Ginger
and,
Rogers.
You know, that's all part. That's yep. part of the roots of, you know, really of what rock and roll is.
I totally agree, and I think if you look at some of the documentaries out on television now, and I mean, for people out there who haven't seen them, but there's some great roots documentaries about the 30s
amazing.
And the 40s,
yeah.
50s and 60s,
absolutely.
Going right through.
Well, you know, the beauty today,
and looking at all of those different genres of music and how they interweave yeah. with each other, and
well,
and
I
bring
you know,
something
it,
against.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, bringing something into, should we say, a field of rock and roll. I mean, I want to consider myself not as a rock and roll DJ, because I'm not a rock and roll. Well, I think I'm more of a melting pot of world eclectic vintage music. And it could be everything. It could be like from Mambo Cuban to kind of like punk rock surf to, you know, a classic Bill Haley record to a hillbilly trucking record. So it's all about good music rather than just one type of music.
I can only agree with you.
Well, thank you very much.
I can only agree with you. No,
I've got a gun to his head, by the way.
Going back to, we talked a bit about the trendy yeah. scene in the early 80s, and I seem to remember that as being a very big influence in bringing more people to the rocking scene. And I say the rocking scene at that point.
Yeah, we're coining it as a rocking scene because we've got to coin it in something. So
I think if you think about it then, and I've discussed this many times on my shows, is that it was different genres of music. And I think if you look at 50s Flash, he did help bring that all together.
Yeah.
He brought different types of sounds together into a rockabilly club. Or well, wasn't even really a rockabilly club. It was a rocking club.
It was actually the first of... Like you say, like a rocking
club. It was
first
of the rocking
It was
scenes,
first of the rocking
yeah.
club, as far as I know. I mean, if there was anything before that...
Please tell me.
Please tell us.
Email.
Because, you know, as far as I know, that was it, you know.
But as Mao said, you know, we weren't the only ones doing it. There were other people in the UK.
That's right.
Newcastle, Manchester, Birmingham.
Of course,
all
you know, we're talking about a London scene here. Because, you know, that's all I can vouch for. Because, you know, being from North London and whatever was going on between... You know, like, I suppose the kind of like the borders of South London to North London, I'd kind of go to. You know, you remember I had no money. You know, I didn't drive.
Any money
no, we were doing it for the passion. I remember going to Wembley Market on a Saturday. There used to be a little record store, and this guy had like a little shack, and he had all these posters of people like Billy Fury, you know, Gene Vincent, Elvis, and all these guys, and he was selling records. And I remember he used to open at 12 o'clock, and I used to be there at 11:30 to get into his shop just to try to find a record that I wanted. And there were so many records in there that I wanted that I never heard of, you know, like, you know, there were all the Johnny Burnetts and stuff like that. And I used to kind of like go everywhere. There was another place in Finchley Central, just by the station. Again, a shack.
What was that called?
You're not thinking of Loppy Lugs, are you?
No.
Okay, there used to be a little shack right next to the exit. And that guy in there, every week I used to go in there. I tell you what.
In fact, there were loads of record stores.
Well, there was
loads of record shops in the 80s.
There was loads.
And there's hardly any now.
There's none. You know, I mean, at the moment, I've got a little shop that I do records, which, you know, if anyone's interested, it's called Black Cotton Vintage. And we've got vintage clothing and records and 78s.
And where is it?
It's in Camden. We're there on Saturday and Sundays, sometimes on a Friday. But you can check all that out on my spaces and on my website.
In fact, saying that, there's probably very few record shops around in London anymore. And the majority of them are in Camden, of all places.
Yeah, I know. Camden seems to be the mecca of vinyl, I guess, at the moment. And there are, of course, I mean, once you get into records, if you're a record buff, then you will find all the little holes in the wall.
And, yeah, you know, there's lots of little shops and dealers knocking about throughout the UK.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's it. But what I was going to say to you before was...
You were to tell me something?
I was going to tell you something. It was really important, and I don't think it's been mentioned, was back in the day when I was 14 and 15, on a Sunday in the afternoon...
That's
in the 70s. In the 70s. Well, I used to listen to Radio City. I don't know if you know Radio City.
I remember that vaguely.
Okay, well, Radio City was the first time that... I mean, it was me, a friend of mine called Rocco.
I was a big Caroline fan. A Luxembourg fan.
I think Radio...
Well, and they used to have some rock and roll shows on Luxembourg.
I think they did, yeah. But I could never pick that up. That was too far away.
Luxembourg.
I didn't have the hi-fi. I had, like, a transistor.
I don't know. I'd probably pinch my dad's radio or something to listen to that under the covers.
No, seriously. I remember listening to... Actually, I was in my friend's room, a guy called Rocco, in his bedroom. We were playing records. Yeah, playing rock and roll records. Listen to this, right? This is important. We used to just hang out and listen to rock and roll. And he was a bit older than me, so he could afford all the latest re-releases where all the compilations were coming out, all the MCAs and all the MGMs and CBS.
Do you remember Telstar stuff?
No, well, yeah, there was bits of Telstar, but...
Hallmark. And what else was there? There was a lot of compilations coming out.
There was a lot of compilations. But the major companies were releasing the rare rockabilly stuff.
Yeah.
And when I went to, just before
rockabilly
that...
Rockabilly Dynamite.
Rockabilly, well, that was a great album. And that was on a cheap label.
Was that on Hallmark or K-Tel?
Hallmark, I think.
I think it was Hallmark, wasn't it?
I think so. But let me finish my story.
Go on.
This show, they played a track. Actually, we stumbled across the show. We were just kind of putting the radio on, and suddenly this rockabilly track came out. I think it was a Johnny Burnett record or something. And we kind of stuck on it, and we thought, wow, this is a great show. And we listened to it every week for quite a while. And they played this track called Hot and Cold by Marvin Rainwater.
They couldn't have had many records if they only played that.
Well, come on, that was a rare
every
record.
Week.
Not every week, this one time. And it just blew me away. And I'm not going to play it in my next record, but... because I haven't got it with me, but it is a great track. And anyone hasn't heard it, well, you should be shocked, because it's a great record, and it was one of the first hardcore rockabilly bop records I heard. And I used to go down to Finchley Central to this little store, and I used to go to this guy, "Have you got Hot and Cold by Marvin Rainwater?" And he would go, "Who's he?
Hot and cold. My soul." Yeah, man. Great record.
Well, what an amazing record.
If you haven't got that one, you need to go out and buy it.
Go and buy it. I'm MGM. But what I did pick up from this
eBay,
that's where it all happens.
I need a sponsor. eBay sponsor us. Anyway.
Yeah, just get that one in. I did manage to pick up from this record store at the time, and I've never heard of him at the time, was Vince Taylor's Jet Black Machine.
Are we going to hear that one?
No.
That's a bit disappointing.
It is, isn't it? I'm sorry. Shall I just talk about something that we're going to play then?
Yeah, I think we need to. I think we need to.
All right,
to.
Let's do something.
We need
like
to play another record. We need another record.
All right, well, I found one.
You found one?
I have found one.
Are you sure?
But it's not a rock and roll record. Well, it's kind of crossover, kind of. It could fall into northern crossover, R&B, stroke, whatever, but it's actually done
do
by
what?
White. No, well, it's done by a white guy, which is kind of unusual, and it's on Federal.
Okay.
And it's called Burnt Toast and Black Coffee. By Mike Pedican, which is rare as rocking horse shit. If you find a copy, you'd have to pay about $1,000.
As much as that?
I can't believe it, man. It's just ridiculous. But, you know...
Is that a grand's worth of 45?
It's a grand record. It's a grand's worth of 45.
A grand's worth of 45?
Yeah, don't tell everybody.
That's UK pounds, so that's what, 140 to the dollar, so that's $1,500.
Yeah, I guess it is. Well, the last one went for £1,000. I mean, you know, probably when it was unheard and not played, you know, I mean, I think Ace really re-released it on a CD.
Ace released some great stuff in the 80s.
Brilliant label, man. Yeah, fantastic. I mean,
well, let's get on with the track.
All right, well, this is Mike Pedican's Burnt Toast and Black Coffee. Although it's not the original, it's the second version that I know of. But on the next interview, we'll play the original. Here we go.
Up built the gate. Yeah, we've been keeping my baby out late. Eating burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. I'm eating burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. Burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. Yeah, that's all she left. Drinking black, black coffee, eating burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee, eating burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. Yeah, that's all she left for me. Yeah, good night kisses was me, sweet as honey from a honeybee. Now you change your honeycomb when you get stung. Buzz, buzz, back home. I'm eating burnt toast, drinking black, black coffee. Burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. Burnt toast and drinking black, black coffee. Yeah, that's all she left for me.
It's really weird, you know, because that record there, if you played it on a rock and roll circuit, they would stroll to it. If you played it on a Northern Soul scene, they'd Northern Soul to it. So what is it? I don't think it's anything. I don't think records should be anything. I think they should be just dance records.
But then if you look at a current rocking scene in London, there are people in the scene, DJs, who are playing Northern Soul tracks as strollers.
Well, they're not just playing Northern Soul.
Well, it's also not Northern Soul. It's like strolling R&B. It's an R&B soul track that's been
I want to put my oar in here. The way I look at it, it's not about what sort of dance you're supposed to dance to a record. It's about
totally
the record.
Agree. It's about the appreciation of the music.
It's the music, it's the vibe. And if you want to twist to what you might consider a bopper, then twist to it.
I mean, there were semi-rocking records on the Northern Soul scene. Mm. There's Northern Soul style records played on the rocking scene.
Well, it's like the mod scene, they play a lot of blues, you know, which crosses over to
a lot of R&B,
and Latin stuff. So
Bo Diddley, stuff like that.
Exactly. I mean, if you appreciate good music, you appreciate good music. But
I mean, Down Home Special.
Great track. Yeah, absolutely.
And that I've heard that at mod clubs.
Yeah, well, why shouldn't you, though? But I mean,
Heard it at rocking clubs.
Yeah, but it's no one's record. It doesn't belong to anybody.
It doesn't belong to anybody.
Music belongs to everybody.
If it fits into what is happening that night, then it's great.
Exactly. I think, you know, the music will speak for itself. I don't think you should start, you know, classifying, well, this is this and that's that, because when it was recorded, it was never intended to be anything but just a good sound.
What I find really hard nowadays to totally understand is, I understand that it was hillbilly rock, country rock, and then you got rockabilly out of that, and you know, but the word rockabilly wasn't really used that much in the 80s. I mean, it was not a used word in the London scene or rocking scene. It wasn't a used word as such, but it was only later on in the 90s that the word rockabilly started to become more used.
Well, it became because it became more known as a word. I mean, when you started, we're going back to kind of that early 80s when all these companies were releasing rockabilly compilations from their label.
Sure.
Which
like
major
Ace,
label?
Ace Records and...
You know, yeah. MCA, whichever they were doing. The word rockabilly became on everyone's tongue, really.
Yeah.
Because I'd never heard of the word rockabilly until I actually saw like Matt Curtis, and the word rockabilly was introduced to me. So at that point, everyone just knew everything as rock and roll. And really, rockabilly is kind of obscure rock and roll, really, isn't it?
It is. It's a cross between hillbilly and rock and roll, or country and rock and roll.
Well,
not so much
rhythm and blues, you know, as well. It all fits in as well. I mean, you know, it's very hard to define lines. I don't want to define a line because it shouldn't be a line, really.
What got me into the rocking sound or that beaten rhythm was listening to Northern Soul so-called records and then listening to B-sides and finding...
Well, the B-sides are always better, aren't they, really?
Doo-wop.
Yeah. Well, it's all
rock and roll.
Do what became soul, didn't it? Really.
And I think that was the exciting. And incidentally, it is Pancake Day today, and we do have pancakes just rolling
they've
up.
They've just rolled in onto this couch.
Pancakes.
And wow, they look
so
amazing.
So that's Lady Kamikaze coming in there with a pancake suggestion.
She's dived straight in, man. Just
and
Kamikaze.
I'm going to have to get one of these pancakes while I lean over, get a pancake.
You just want to make some pancakes. It's Pancake Day today.
So that was
I'm very good.
Chocolate filling as well.
Lovely.
So carrying on about the different styles
of pancake rock. I don't know any records of pancake rock in them, but I was wondering if there is.
There is a pancake rock out there, I'm sure.
It's got to be a rockabilly record about pancakes. Anyone know about it? Let us know. I play on Pancake Day.
That's it. Pancake Day. I think the way. And you shouldn't really eat while you're doing interviews either.
But it's organic.
It's organic. It's organic. Mm. Moving on, in relation to the records, I mean, were you a big collector in the early 80s? Were you collecting a lot of records, or were you trying to afford to collect records?
Well, I remember going, my first collection of records, or collecting records. Not so much, I don't collect records. I buy records that I want to play. I'm not a collector. I think there are collectors that, you know, buy serial numbers and they have to have everything on that label, blah, 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 blah. It goes on forever. I'm more about what is on this bit of vinyl. I want to hear this record. I've never heard of the label, never heard of the artist. And it's kind of like, it will knock me out if it's a good one, you know?
Did you go to places like the Chicken Shack in Ken Market?
Well, I used to go to jumble sales.
So you really stayed away from the main shops, did you?
I couldn't afford it. I was only a kid. You know, I mean... You know, when you're 15, 16, you're just about to get your bus fare, really.
Well, I kind of agree with that. For me, I was a big collector of so-called soul, R&B soul. You might call it Northern Soul as well. But I also collected rock and roll and rockabilly.
Yeah.
Doo-wop. And I think, for me, it was very hard to find... the money to go out and buy the records at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have the money. I was a lowly dispatch rider for an art company.
I remember buying records off Rex at the Rockin' Clubs.
Yep.
And off...
Rockin' Rex. Rex's Rock and Roll Record Store.
What's his name? I can't remember his name.
And his dad used to be there, didn't he?
That's right, yeah. They used to be together all the time.
I heard that Rex actually moved to Hastings.
I think he sold all his records off and sort of finished doing
it. He went off to Hastings or something, I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if his dad's alive or he died or
I have
something.
No idea. So, but also the other guy, what's the guy with the bow tie? Do you remember him at all?
Oh, yeah. Can't remember his name, though. He used to... The guy used to sell it, but there was a guy who sold at Bumbles, wasn't there? There was a
well,
record
that,
thing.
Well,
yeah, that was him,
that was
wasn't
it.
It?
Well, Rex and this other, I forgot his name now. God, he was a nice guy. But he used to, I remember buying a record from him. Actually, he was the first guy that introduced me more to R&B because they used to play like Choo Choo Chaboogie at one point in a rocking club, believe it or not.
No, totally, and there was loads. I mean, they used to play things like Reet Petit.
Yeah. Which, you know, we all, you know, you can knock them as much as you like, but they're still classics and they're good classics. But I remember listening to, like, Louis Jordan, and I went up to the guy...
Well,
the
Mouse used to play Louis Jordan at Dingwalls.
We all did. I mean, it's all good. We still play. It should still be played because it's a great record. Great records. But I remember going up and I said, have you got anything that sounds like this but not Louis Jordan? Because I'd already got the Louis Jordan. And he said, if you like this, check this out. And it was
five keys.
It wasn't five. He gave me a Bulmers Jackson album.
Oh, right.
Which was on Route 66. And from that album, I kind of discovered kind of a lot. Actually, when I bought that album, I thought I was liking jazz, but it weren't jazz, really, was it?
I'm sorry. Get that last pancake down, mate. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Get it down, your son. But it was... Yeah, born with Jackson, and then the following week, this was at Valentino's, exactly.
Valentino's, right? I remember that.
And the next week, I went up there, and I said, I really like that album. What else have you got? And he goes, well, how about Washboard Sam?
Brilliant.
And I went, yeah, I never heard of him. He's great. Is he good? And he goes, yeah, he's great. And all right, cool, I'll buy it. And I bought it. And the albums at that time were like
you're
five,
a bit like
quid.
Me. I was buying Hillbilly records off Rex.
Well, that's
and
what
I say,
do.
Is that album any good?
Yeah,
going,
exactly.
Yeah. And you get home.
He just wants to sell it to you, really, doesn't he?
Yeah. And you get home and you play it and you go,
That first track's great, but the rest
of it is shit. But
we're not allowed to say those words on it.
You can have the beep beeps in between all this. You know, like actually, it looked quite nice.
I have to sit there and censor the whole show.
Beep beep.
But yeah,
I did buy the Washboard.
There was a lot of that.
I've got to say,
miss.
Yeah, but I've got to say, I like both of those albums, and thank you, because at the end of the day, from those two albums, I discovered the blues, and I discovered a lot of other stuff that I would never have discovered if I didn't even go to the club generally, and for the DJs at the time that were playing stuff that I've never heard of. And I'm hoping I can do that same for people now. Basically, you're taking someone else's shoes in a way.
Sure.
All you're doing is you're taking another extension of what they did.
You're just a custodian looking after records that you can play to people and they can take on board what they've listened to. And I mean, I get it all the time. I go to clubs and I go, what's that record? Where did that come from? You know, the fact that it was played 15, 20 years ago.
Play it again. But there's a lot of people out there now that, you know, are only just discovering the kind of music that you like or what we, you know, all like. And to them, it's new. And even the classics that to us are old, to them it's new. But there's no reason why you shouldn't play classics all the time.
We're all burping away.
It's those pancakes, but they were lovely.
Ooh.
No more Coke.
No more Coca-Cola. No more advertising.
No. I think we should play a record.
We're not doing any more. Let's play a record.
Well, actually, yeah, in a minute. Let's talk about the record. Should we just choose a record and talk about it?
Yeah, we'll talk about a record.
Well, let's talk about a record. I'll tell you what, I kind of like to play maybe... and we're going to take this from the Lady Luck Volume 2. And it's a track called Old Folks Boogie by Al Simmons. And it's kind of like a shuffle beat, bluesy... Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to call it a bop. I don't want to call it any kind of genre.
Is it a boogie?
It is a boogie. It is definitely a boogie, 100%.
I mean, do you remember that record, that LP that came out, and it was all boogie tracks? I mean, what was it? It came out on Ace. I can't remember. It was called... I think it was called Okie Boogie.
Was it called the Okie Boogie?
The Okie Boogie. It was an LP. It was blue LP, and it was Okie Boogie.
Well, that one got by me, because I don't remember that one.
Don't you remember that? No. I have to pull that out there, yeah?
Pull it out of the bag, man. I bet there's some great tracks on that. Okay, let's do it, man. This is called Old Folks Boogie, Just Like Me. Let's do it.
So good, I wanna boogie until the break of dawn. When the old folks boogie and the young ones too, can't nobody, baby, boogie like I do, boogie until the break of dawn. Well, old folks boogie and grandma too, can't nobody boogie like grandpa do boogie until the break of dawn. Grandma called grandpa, this is what she said: well, the boy's too young, might as well be dead, boogie until the break of dawn. Oh yeah! feels so good. I want a boogie until break of dawn. Oh, and the old folks bebop and the young ones bebop.
Well,
did you like that?
Yeah, I like that boogie track. It was a boogie track. Mm. Yeah, I do like boogie tracks. So I do find them a bit monotonous occasionally, but I do like that one. There are a lot of boogie tracks out there, and they do tend to sound the same, like the popcorn boogie, the jukebox boogie, the whatever boogie. How many boogies can you make?
Not enough.
No, but seriously, you know, we get into the days of the mid-80s,
yeah,
mid-80s,
yeah, mid-80s,
like 87. I mean, Dingwalls opened in 87.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me that your first DJ job was a place called...
It was called the Camden Palace.
A Camden Palace.
Oh, that was way back. That was actually my first DJ night.
And it was, and the trendy night was on the Thursday, and the Wednesday was the...
Well, it was called...
Was your night.
It was my night. It was actually called In the Mood, although we...
That was it. And, you know, and who brought out... There was a tape cassette brought out. What was it? NME?
Oh,
NME or someone like the... Some music paper brought out a tape cassette in association with the Wednesday night...
At the Camden Palace.
And it was all... R&B Jump.
That's right. I played a lot of R&B
Jump. R&B Jump style.
Yeah.
And rockabilly on this tape.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a lot, you know, there was My Boy Flat Tops and all the rest of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Boy Bennett and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, no, that was...
That must have been pre-Dingwalls.
It was a little bit... Yeah, it was, because Mousy wasn't DJing then.
No, Mousy was in a band.
Used to come to the club.
Yeah. There you go.
He used to be coming to the... That's how I met Mousy, through my first DJing job.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, it was the first time I'd actually met the kind of South London crowd coming up to North London going to this gig, you know.
That's it.
Which was great. And we had the Chevalier Brothers playing at the time.
I remember. And there was... and I think at that point, I think it... I don't know what happened. When did that end? When did that Camden Palace thing end?
It kind of ended when I guess I was playing.
You didn't want to do it anymore.
No, I'll tell you what happened. We
you said enough is enough. I'm not doing this anymore.
Well, they stopped. They said to me, you know what it was? One night it was a point where, you know, like,
they said, we've got a new promoter, people, Nino.
Yeah,
we're
that was it. I'm
you.
Out of there. You're out the back out door. Well, you know when people don't, you know, like, they want to see bums on seats, most of these big venues.
Yeah.
And they also want to see, like, the dance floor full up with people dancing, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But you know one of those nights when no one dances and everyone stands around the circle of the dance floor, well, and no one dares to go into the middle?
Because they're all frightened.
Because they're all...
In those days, all the girls jived.
Yeah.
And hardly any blokes...
They wanted to get drunk.
They just wanted to get drunk. And
well,
they
that was all right, because I danced.
I used to like dancing.
Cool, I know. So I remember you jiving.
Dancing was one thing I did like. I'll tell you what, there was not many blokes who jived.
No, they didn't. But what happened that particular night, I had some kind of like late 50s, early 60s stuff with me. I mean, you know, silly things like Jaquila and Twist and Shout by the Isley Brothers that, you know, kind of crossed over. And and I thought...
And the management didn't like it.
Well, no, what it was, because nobody was dancing, I thought, you know what? Bleep, bleep, everybody. And I'd put this kind of early 60s stuff on, and suddenly the whole dance floor filled up. Because it wasn't jive stuff. It was kind of people can just shake their own thing on their own.
Yeah, yeah. But I do remember that. There was a mixture of music so it wasn't just rocking.
No,
it
so from that point on, I started to mix it up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then about 8 months later, the management come up to me and they go, right, we want you only to play 60s. And then I just went, okay. And then I just played 50s and I got the sack.
Well, there you have it. Live on the Preacher's Podcast, Nino gets a sack.
And that's not the first time.
Then you moved on from there, and I remember Mouse told me on the show, he started Dingwalls in 1987. Mm. It was a big mistake. There was just some records out the back. The DJ hadn't turned up.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went on, DJ'd, and then they offered him a regular night.
Well, that's
or regular day.
The best nights
say.
Always start like that. You know, they're not premeditated. They kind of just fall into your lap, and it's the same with the Camden Palace. You know, it kind of fell into my lap. There was a guy who was employed to play the music. He was a load of rubbish. And I said to him, have you got anything good? And he went, well, I don't know nothing about this music. And I go, well, I've got some records in the car. You can stick them on. And he went, all right, then. So I brought them in and everybody started dancing. And then the following week, the management go, well, why don't you DJ? And I went, all right, then. And that was it.
There you go. Got a job. If you think about the scene in 87, 88, and we'll move through that quite quickly, you had people like Rohan, Rohan the Man, and you were doing clubs with Rohan, weren't you?
Well, we had a dance duo together at one point called Salt and Pepper.
Salt and Pepper? A dance duo?
We did. We did this little show, this little routine thing, believe it or not, to like a Roy Brown track, like a hard, kind of fast Roy Brown track.
Okay.
Called Hurry, Hurry,
what,
Baby.
Did you dance together or something?
Well, we did kind of just like... kind of like throwing each other around the room kind of thing, you know, with splits and all that kind of
do
stuff.
You know, I've got some recollection of going to a club in Camden in a basement and you doing something like that with
Ryan.
With him.
Yeah.
I remember
we did it at Gaz's. We'd done it at a few places
in
Brixton.
I remember this. Yeah.
It didn't last very long, but it was a bit of fun. And at that time, nobody was doing that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, we're talking like, nobody even knew what R&B was, really, or that caliber or dancing.
It was all about that sort of time, and Steve Ross was
DJing at the upstairs at Electric Ballroom. We did our show there actually, downstairs in the Trendy Bit.
Yeah,
you know.
It's run by God, what's his name?
I don't know. Who was it run? Probably not.
Mark Wigan used to do the flyers there.
I don't know.
The famous artist, Mark Wigan.
Okay.
And it was Jay Strongman.
Jay Strongman
used to play the Dirt Box.
Yeah.
And Jay used to do downstairs, and then upstairs was Steve.
Yeah, you see, I don't know these guys because they come all from the soul side of things.
No, but they didn't. They came from the trendy scene.
The trendy soul
the
scene.
Trendy,
or whatever they be.
It wasn't a trendy soul scene, it was a trendy rocking scene. There was a trendy rocking scene that verged onto the rockabilly scene.
Yeah, well, that's why they look like rockabillys,
didn't
they?
And stuff like
kind
that.
I could see. I mean, because you had Rockachar in Kensington, didn't
that's
you?
That's it, Rockachar.
Which were all kind of connected in a way. And
then
you had
there was
Johnson's and...
American Classics.
That's right, and Robot Shoes and
all that, of that. And it
all
was all on a rocking vibe.
Everything was on a 50s vibe.
50s vibe.
Yeah, definitely.
And in that time, you also had the Levi's ad that came out on television.
Of course, with the Sam Cooke record. That's right.
And the rocking guy. And who was that model? I can't Nick Kamen.
Yeah.
And he takes his pants off in the laundrette,
and all the girls go, and he throws
the Levi's into the washing machine, and
that's
off
right.
he goes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all part of. It was all part of, I guess, kind of a comeback of. I guess, kind of like
50s style.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be 50s music, but it's a 50s styling.
Even at that time, you were having. Diners being built in King's Road.
That's right.
And you had all sorts of 50s style memorabilia
that's
shops
right.
turning up. And
that's right.
All sorts of strange things.
And you know, you'd not necessarily, you wouldn't, because at one point when I was like in, should we say, so I just want to go backtrack a little bit, because when I was kind of like 13, 14, now at 13, 14, I couldn't afford a drape or anything like that. So you kind of make do, you know, you go Oxfam, you sew your velvet collars on and stuff like that. And when you see a Ted walking down the street, you've got a quiff, he's got a quiff, and you nod. Right, just a bit like a classic car club when you kind of honk the horn when you're driving down the street.
Or flash your lights.
Or you flash, whatever you want to flash. But you know, that was a point where you kind of knew that that other person was, should we say, living a similar lifestyle to you in mentally, maybe, or whatever you may call it.
That's it.
But in the 80s, that kind of left because everybody looked like a rockabilly. It doesn't matter whether you're into kind of like Boy George or whether you're into like, you know, Johnny Burnett. You still had a flat top and you'd kind of wear like open neck shirts, you know, the loophole and.
Or bowling shirts
were very big, you know. So that kind of went a bit mainstream as in like fashion, but not necessarily like music. Although you had like later on, I agree, and
I think the clubs changed. You mean you look at places like Silks down in Shepherd's Bush?
Shepherd's Bush.
And then there was used to go quite a few. There was one in Croydon, I remember. It was always a big trek, and I used to go down there. I went down there to see. I seem to remember going to see Sonny West play.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went to see Sonny West play, and he used to go out with a girl, I can't remember her name. No, she was a little girl, but I can't remember her name.
Okay, he's been out a lot of girls, shall we say.
Yeah. It was a great night out. It was in a scout hut type environment.
You know,
I've been to a lot of those sort of clubs.
I was just about to say, rock and roll clubs have always been in
If you know what
places.
That scout club was, tell me. Email me. Post it on my MySpace.
Why couldn't they have been a girl guides club or something? You know, I mean... Why Scouts Club? Why
I don't know. It was a Scout Hut. Incidentally, people who want to find my MySpace, it's www. myspace.com/the_preacher. And you can check out all the other shows that we've been doing, and you can post your comments. I'll only post the ones I really like. No, there's no censorship. You can hear what you want to hear. But yes, if you do know that Scout Hut in Croydon, Scout Hut, shall I say,
hut.
That Sonny West played at in Croydon, and I believe there was another club near it where King Kurt played.
Are you talking about more like the Clarendon Hotel? Or
the Clarendon Hotel did have some rocking dudes.
Because you had Barney Kumos did like a rockabilly thing there, which was more of a kind of a punch-up night, you know, rather than anything else.
In fact, virtually all the rocking nights were punch-up nights. Well, they were. There was a lot of violence. I mean,
there was. And it stopped now, which is great.
I think probably the biggest one I personally was involved in was at the Electric Ballroom.
Really?
Upstairs. It was probably the most violent night I've been involved in for a long time. I mean, I'll set the scene quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
3,000 people downstairs who were into soul music, jazz funk, etc. And about 100 people upstairs who were into rockabilly, rock and roll, blues, boppers, that sort of stuff.
Which I was probably up there.
R&B, etc.
Yeah.
And one night it kicked off with all the casuals. They came upstairs. They decided, right, we're going to have a go at the rockers. And I tell you what, they came out the worse. I mean,
but you know,
I'm not saying it was a good thing.
It's nothing new, is it?
It's nothing new. And a few people got stabbed up.
You know, and why? Because we like different sound.
And just because we like different music.
Or we dress differently, but it's rubbish.
It's absolute rubbish.
It's rubbish.
Music is music.
Bring back the hippies.
Music is music. And I think people have to realise that. And it's not about being stuck into a particular genre.
No.
I mean, I personally don't have any hair anymore nowadays, but when I did have hair, it was like a tin cut, but, you know, so I had a little quiff, you know, whatever. And some guy liked wearing, you know, loafers, and another bloke liked wearing sandals, you know, it's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but, you know, this is never kind of, well, I think it's kind of got better, a lot better, because...
But it was a storming riot fight, and all the bouncers were involved, there were table legs and chairs,
yeah,
and
that's ridiculous.
You name it, it was a serious fight. Steve Ross had a little bit of reputation with his little mob up there, and it was, you know, I don't know where that was involved, but, you know, it did go off, and I do remember it as being pretty heavy. That was probably one of the major ones.
I wasn't there that night, but I can see how it happened. You know, because it was quite like you're up there, we're down there. You know, you don't come down, we don't go up, kind of vibe. You know?
Oh no, I don't think that. You've got some of the rocking crowd downstairs, and then you know you've got Jay Strongman DJing, and he looks like a rocking.
He looks
guy.
Like a rockabilly, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah,
you know, and
without a doubt.
Anyone wants to look up Jay Strongman and find a bit about him, they can look him up on MySpace again. Strongman, he lives in Los Angeles now. What are we going to listen to next? You know, you got another track there off one of the CDs.
Yeah, I think I'm going to.
Are we going to play some vinyl?
We're going to play some vinyl, and what we're going to do is, I think we're going to go for something completely different. I think rather than, I mean, we've kind of gone a bit rockin'y and a bit soul-y. Kind of like all these tracks I've played tonight, actually, or today, I should say. It's evening, isn't it?
We're recording this in the evening, so it is tonight.
They've all been played at Lady Luck more than once. That's why they're on the CD. That's kind of representing about the Lady Luck Club, really, and the different styles that we play. So I think on this one, I really want to play something more on the kind of surf side of things, you know, with like electric guitar and. And if you listen to the intro of this record, it actually sounds like it could be a rave record, which is kind of weird. I mean, you'll know what I mean when we put it on. So let's go for it. It's by The Hustlers. It's on the Lady Luck Volume 3.
I don't have that one.
CD 3? Well, I shall give you that one, don't worry.
The Hustlers.
The Hustlers.
Nothing to do with Hustler magazine.
It could be. It's Lady Luck. You never know what goes on.
What sort of track is it?
Well, that's the name of the track there. Ineria.
Ineria?
Ineria.
Oh, my God. Ineria.
Ineria. The Hustlers.
The Hustlers.
Let's do it.
Yeah, really?
Press the button, man.
I'm pressing it.
Come on.
I'm pressing it.
Look, it's too hot for the deck.
No, I'm pressing it. Hold on a second. Here we go.
Oh.
Well, the Hustlers. What more can you say? It's a real hustle. It's a hustle. Now, and just quickly going to the fashion side of things. I mean, fashion was more accessible in the 80s. It was cheaper. A lot of people were bringing stuff in from the States. There was that Top Gun film that came out with the...
With the flight jackets.
With the flight jackets. So the whole flight jacket scene got really big. A lot of people wearing A2s, US Navy jackets, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I remember kind of looking for stuff like box jackets, like really at the time, because that's what we knew them as. It's like tweed jackets, very Presley kind of looking stuff, really.
And there were a lot of people, you know, you could find things like Ricardos.
Ricardos, yeah.
I mean, Ricardos were
hand-painted ties, you know. Like
hand-painted ties.
Dali ties. Yeah. And all that kind of stuff. I mean, Flip was probably the main ingredient at that time, wasn't it? I mean, Covent Garden was saturated with vintage clothes shops. I mean, you could walk down Long Acre and it would just be like swamped.
It was swamped, definitely.
You know, like tweed jackets, tenor.
And a lot of the people in the rocking scene actually worked in that scene.
Well, they did. You know, people like Trevor Collins, who's a DJ as well.
Tim Tastic. Tim used to work at American Classics.
Well, let's face it, that was our dream, wasn't it, in a way? Because, you know, we were all into the music, the fashion, the cars, the whole lifestyle thing.
And I tell you, in those days, you could buy original Levi's from the 40s. You could buy them.
But don't forget, this is the pre-era of what we now know as collectibles. I mean, like the Salvage Edge jeans and the Buckle Mark One jackets and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at that time, they were a little bit dearer than the rest because they were more older, but they weren't that expensive.
I bought a number one jacket for £15.
There you go.
I mean, come on.
Exactly.
That's like 1930s Levi jacket, one pocket belt buckle at the back.
Exactly, but you know,
£15.
The market created later as a collectible, because at that time it was just old clothes and it was all from America, and that was the first time we would be able to buy real American clothing, unless you went to the States, you know, before it all came over.
And there wasn't the reproduction stuff. It was all original.
It was all original
Hawaiians, all original stuff. And I mean, really, where is it all?
Well,
all in British wardrobes, hung, you know.
Yeah, dust covers all over everything.
If you listen to this show, send me an email message and say you've got some for sale.
Anyone selling any old vintage clothes, come and check me out anybody selling collections of records they want to get rid of, come and see me.
I just got for my birthday. My birthday's this week, actually. I'm 21.
Wow.
No, I'm 81, actually.
Okay.
I'm 81 years old on my MySpace.
I'll tell you what, you're wearing really well.
I'm wearing well. Mm. I just got three Freedom books from a guy called Rin Tanaka. Sorry, I apologize, Rin, if you ever listen to this show. I got it through some friends in LA, Jim Fox.
Okay, yeah, I know Jim. Nice
and Marianne.
Marianne,
they were both into the rocking scene at the time in the 80s. And Jim and I think Marianne worked in American Classics.
Well, they used to have a store in Camden Market.
Yeah, that was later on in the mid-90s.
Maybe a bit earlier. Yeah.
There's some great stuff in the Freedom books. And if anyone, you know, you need to get out there and have a quick search for that. It's called My Freedom. F-R-E-E-E, not, what am I saying? F-R-E-E, Dam, D-A-M-N, so Free Dam.
I tell you what, these are great reference books. I mean, they're the best reference books I've ever seen.
They're the best, and I was very lucky to get Rin to actually sign them to me, and they were brought over by Jim and Marianne last week.
You're the lucky one, then.
And I am the lucky one. I still need to say thanks to him personally.
I want a copy. Oi, if you're listening, I want a copy.
But there's some great books there. And no doubt Jim and Marianne will be listening to this show.
I'm sure they will.
I'm sure, you know.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Jim, Marianne in Los Angeles.
It's nice and sunny there, isn't it?
Yeah, I wish I was there.
Moving on,
I think.
We're in fashion.
We're thinking fashion.
Yeah, pre-collectible clothes.
Pre-collectible clothes, pre-money clothes. You know, you could buy Gab jackets for, you know, tenors.
Yeah, but don't forget, none of us were really working properly. We were still broke by this point.
We're still skint. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of money.
I was 16, I suppose. I wasn't even driving.
I started working in the building industry at the time.
You probably made loads of money then.
I was a carpenter and joiner, and there was a guy called Ian Fahey,
I know Ian.
Ian Farhay, he's played in numerous amounts of bands.
He's a great guitarist, you know, Ian.
He
played with Jack and the Rippers.
Jack and the Rippers.
Anyone listening out there? Nick? All right, mate? Jack and the Rippers.
Jack and the Rippers. And Ian was playing guitar with him.
Yeah.
And I know Ian's played in a few bands. And he used to rent a room off me in the 80s.
Is that right?
I remember when he bought his first guitar, he couldn't afford a Gretsch White Falcon.
Well, who could?
And he went out and bought a repro.
Yeah, but yeah,
a Japanese repro. So there you go. And, you know, he learned to play guitar on that. And he did a little band thing with Fagan. I don't know. Fagan.
He's not with us anymore, is he?
No, he died of drug overdose.
Yeah,
I think
it was the old sugar thing, wasn't it, really? Yeah. Mm.
So, but yeah, Fagan used to be, and there was who was the DJ, the drummer in that band? I can't remember.
It wasn't Ricky, was it?
Yeah, Ricky.
It was Ricky.
But yeah, the whole scene then was, you know, you could actually go out and buy clothes, and it would be shot. You could buy mint stuff.
Yeah, and it was mint. Well, if you think about, I mean, even today, you know, you go to the States and you do find a lot of mint stuff still, but you've got to pay the price now. I mean, those days are over, you know, that's it, you know.
The one great thing that's come out of the collectible scene is that the Japanese took hold of it and they churned it out 20 times better than the original.
Well, I've got to say, they're the best in the world when it comes to reproducing something.
Unbelievable quality stuff. I mean,
you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the ranges of Hawaiian shirts that are out, the ranges of jackets.
Well, they just copy it to
a T. I mean, there was the whole tour jacket scene, the A2 scene, the military scene was big in the 80s as well.
Yeah, shirts and, you know, I mean,
that's it.
Absolutely. You put one, you know, one next to each other and, you know, you've got to be a real train spotter to know the difference.
I know.
It's kamikaze power, isn't it?
It's kamikaze power. But, you know, I think the Japanese did it in the 60s with motorcycles. They took the British bike and they rebuilt it and they started winning all the races.
Yeah, well, they improved on them.
They improved on it.
All the faults that we had.
and it's the same, you know, it's the same with vintage collectibles. I mean, they just took Levi jeans, copied them and made them better.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a guy in the early 90s, mid 90s, and he bought up all the looms from the US, from Levi's, and he took them to Japan and started producing the fabric again. Started producing the salvage
fabric.
And
you know what? No one else
And
would
started
do that.
Reproducing the jeans. And no one else would do that. And in the end, Levi's tried to buy the looms back off him. And he said, no, I'm keeping them.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, he wasn't interested. But in relation to the fashion side of things, you could get original clothing that was tip-top condition.
But also, not just original clothes, tip-top condition, but even like dead stock.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. There's dead stock.
Dead
clothing.
Stock stuff that you've just been sitting in warehouses. I mean, obviously America were not interested in this stuff.
There wasn't really a rocking scene.
I mean, even now. I mean, now it's kind of obviously developed. You've got obviously the car scenes.
I mean, there was a rocking scene in Europe. There was a big scene in London.
But London's always had a scene. I mean, since I've been into rock and roll, it's always had something to do with a scene of some sort. You know, since I discovered what rock and roll was.
In Europe, my fond memories of Europe. You had the Horn Festival. And that was running then. And I traveled to Europe a few times to rocking events in the 80s. And, I always had good times. And I think for me, the rocking scene died for me in 1989. I found it very boring at the time. I loved the music. I just found the politics too much, and I shied away from it
because it became more of a punch-up kind of night out. Rather,
it was. It was definitely that. And also, I got divorced off it as well.
Right, so you had other things going on.
I had 20 other million other things going on.
But
at the same
saying that,
time,
you know,
I just had to get out of it. It was too much.
You know, at the same time, back in that day, in that period, shall we say, you know, all right, you know, put aside what we call the rocking scene, but you also had another scene developed from the rocking scene.
Totally agree.
Okay, which was like the jive scene.
The jive scene,
and
the 40s
scene.
The 40s scene, and
these people were kind of more
military
dressy.
Military vehicle collectors.
Yes, as well.
Dressing up.
They were more
Glenn Miller style.
Exactly. which I hate to kind of say that.
No, really, but like, it's important, because it was part of it.
It was another break off.
Yeah, it was a break off.
From Teddy Boys, Rockabilly's, and then we had Rockabilly, and then we had this other side scene. I mean,
you look at Robin, who runs the Rhythm Riot.
Yeah.
Robin, I knew Robin when
Bumbles.
He had...
Yeah. I remember him with hair.
Yeah, I remember.
I had hair then.
And, Robin went down the 40s route. He went down the R&B 40s route, yeah. And he loves that. And, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah.
And I think Rohan did as well.
A great club. I mean, I remember Rohan having
Fortissimo.
And, you know...
Rohan the man.
You know,
I wish he was on the show, actually, because he could do it a lot better than I could.
Rohan, you know, I mean, Rohan and I go back a long way, you know, and we both went down the same route, you know. We shied from the kind of rockabilly thing and got into the 40s kind of jump jive and R&B and blues popping stuff.
I seem to remember at the same time that the whole Lindy Hop scene blew up. It wasn't a massive scene, but it blew up, and they had that little dance troupe that went around doing Lindy Hop expos.
That's right. I didn't go that direction. I've got to say, that wasn't for me.
Personally, it wasn't for me either.
Yeah, there wasn't kind of like the devil wasn't there. It was a bit kind of like Ovaltine.
It was
me,
a bit,
you know?
Ovaltine-y, and it was a bit.
I'm not sure about. I mean. I think it's great, you know, but it's not my bag, you know. Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of stuck to my guns, and then whatever genre I like.
I think whatever you're into, whatever type of dance you're into it.
Good luck to you.
Lindy Hop dance, you know, wasn't for me, but it's for other people, definitely.
Yeah, but saying that, you know, I mean, it's kind of like what a club or a movement or some sort projects. I mean, there's also, I mean, you can go to San Francisco and there's like an Art Deco Society, you know,
yeah.
And there's like an Al Capone Society. I mean, there's all kinds of these kind of nostalgic kind of club meeting things. But what they lose, to my opinion, is the element of darkness in all of it, because it's all gone squeaky clean. And at the time, it wasn't squeaky clean.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, no,
You know, it's like listening to kind of like Pat Boom, you know, who was around in 1955 doing Tutti Frutti. All right, if you like Pat Boom, good luck to you.
Dean Martin.
You know, but Dean Martin's
I like Dean Martin.
But he's cool. Dean Martin's got something. You know, he's a crooner. He's a boy, you know. It's like,
But let's get to the late 80s.
We're talking about fashion, weren't we?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, late 80s. Early 90s. For me, 89 was probably my last year. I moved out of London.
Did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I moved up to Harlow. And then I started going to America.
Did you?
And I moved out to the States for a while.
Where'd you go?
Went to New York, and I went to LA. I spent about 4.5 years out there.
Oh, wow.
Working in the fashion industry. And working for menswear clothing company.
What kind of stuff? Was it retro lines, or was it more kind of...
It was more techno, of all things. Okay. It was techno clothing line.
Well, the techno,
but at the end of the day,
the time,
that was paying
it?
The bills, and that was paying for the food. So,
fair enough.
You know, I'll take it on board. Still had all my records then. I was still into that sort of sound, but at the same time, I was collecting funk music, of all things.
Well, you know, it's
I was collecting late 60s, yeah. Early 60s, 60s
well, you're a music
sound
lover.
Funk music.
Yeah, but Simon... You're a music lover, and anyone that loves music won't just collect one thing. As I was collecting rockabilly and R&B, I was still collecting soul and stuff.
It makes two of us. I was collecting all of it.
So
you're
collecting
whatever
appeals to you.
I love Zydeco.
Exactly.
I love all sorts of music.
Yeah, you're not boxing yourself in with anything.
No, and that's the problem with a lot of people out there. They do box themselves into those little slots.
Well,
and,
I don't agree with people that say like rockabilly shouldn't have any drums, for instance.
Yeah.
Well, then, you know, then what does someone like Redhead, who's saying Redhead Woman again?
Redheaded Woman.
What's his name?
You mean that Sun record art?
Yeah, I mean, what does that make
Sonny Burgess?
Does that make Sonny
is that
Burgess?
The one
it's pancakes. They've got me high. What have you put in them? Oh, sorry,
Sonny Burgess.
It was a tip of my tongue. But does that make Sonny Burgess swing playing a trumpet?
I don't think so. I think
because some purists will say rockabilly shouldn't have drums.
I mean, it's a bit like if you look at Rockabilly Rave now. I mean there was a situation at Rockabilly Rave, and I'm not going to mention any names.
Don't mention any names.
There was a DJ. I don't like politics.
Nor do I.
Just will get stay away from that. But there was a DJ playing a blues bopper record.
Yeah.
And someone came up to another DJ and said, "Oh, this ain't
beep, beep, rockabilly. And that DJ turned around and said, hold on a second. You used to dance to this back in Dingwalls in bloody 1988 or whatever.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Yeah. You know, and then the bloke going, oh, yeah, you know, so
I know,
and I think in those situations, it's not just about rockabilly. You know, rockabilly is a great sound.
It's a great sound. We all love rockabilly.
We all love it, definitely. And you know, there's no doubt about it. But
I like
mixing
blues,
it
what?
Up. Mixing it up is some of the greatest.
Mixing
stuff
it up is
do.
The spice of life.
I mean, if you DJ out there, which I'm sure there's a lot of DJs listening to this show. I mean, yeah, all
sure,
over
yeah.
Europe.
Yeah.
In Japan, in America.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, mix it up, man.
Well, I've been doing that all my life.
Mix it up.
You know, and the thing is, music is a love affair, and it's an ongoing love affair. And if you truly like music, you will be open to all different things.
And
it could be all related.
Are you going
to
mix it up now?
I'm going to mix
it up. What are you going to mix it up?
I'm going to mix it up so bad now that it's going to freak everybody out.
What are you going to play next?
Actually, I think I'm going to put on, you know Johnny Otis, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, Johnny Otis is always known for, I don't know, what would you describe Johnny Otis? I mean, what is he? Roughly, what would you say he was? R&B, jazz, blues, I mean, what is he?
He's
I mean, he was a white guy.
Sort of a bit of both.
He was a white guy, grew up in a black neighbourhood, listened to a lot of jazz, a lot of blues. I mean, he had some rock and roll hits, didn't he? He did the hand jive thing that became a popular thing.
Yeah.
But this track is probably early 50s, I think, and it's got a kind of exotic vibe about it in a way. It's got a bit of kind of Latin feel to it, and it's called Ali Baba's Boogie.
Ali Baba's Boogie. You're playing too many boogie tracks.
I am. Or do you want to change?
Let's play it.
I think we should play it. You know why? Because it's got a flute in it.
Play it.
And you know, and you don't hear that in old music.
Play
often.
It.
Let's do it. This is Johnny Otis. Ali Baba's Boogie.
Alibaba's Boogie, take 4. Do it again. Take 5.
Okay, you still got the preacher here, and DJ El Nino from the Lady Luck Club. We got up to the late 80s, we all got out of it a little bit, and then, you know, we talked about what went on for you in the late 90s. I mean, the 90s was pretty dead for me. I started doing funk clubs with a big DJ called Keb Darge.
Hey, Keb.
And in fact, if it wasn't Keb meeting me in Berwick Street Market, he wouldn't know what funk was.
Well, there you go, Keb. Remember that.
So, but generally, I still had my rocking records. I still love the roots of it. I still wanted to be there, definitely. I just found, I went through a bit of madness in my life. I got a little bit depressed, and I sold a lot of my rocking 45s off at the
time. Bad move, bad move.
And you know, I'm rebuilding it now. But at the time, I sold a lot of my stuff off, sold a lot of albums off.
Yeah, but I think, you know...
And I just went through a period of my life that I just thought I needed a break.
We're both at a similar age, I think. And I think that we're hitting our kind of, what, early 30s, mid... No, 30s.
I wish I was in my early 30s now,
at that time.
Oh, yeah.
At that time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because 30s, I mean...
MySpace says I'm 81, but, you know, I can deal with it.
But, yeah, I mean, if I look back on that period, I mean, I think we're all kind of reaching at a different age and a crossroads in life, and the clubs wasn't the main concern. I think clubs went a different direction to what I liked originally anyway, but we were all going through a change... Of everything.
You know, really. For me, I moved into Soho. I moved into Soho in Central
from
London.
Essex.
Yeah, from Harlow to Soho. And I moved in with a guy called Russ Kay, who was a funk DJ, who I'd known from the late 80s anyway, from some of his funk soul clubs. Mm. And I started doing clubs with him. And I started doing the Wag Club in...
the Wag was great. I used to go there on a Tuesday.
I used to do there called Leave My Wife Alone. It wasn't my do. Keb Dodge used to play. I played. Russ played. There was quite a few people who played there.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a great night, and a lot of people in Japan liked it. So there's one for Lady Kamikaze. But I still used to go to Dingwalls now and then.
Roots are there, man.
I would clock in.
I would clock in.
And that's why I talked about clocking in. Right. And there's a lot of people who used to be on the scene who clock in. And they clock into places like Dingwalls. They'll come down to Dingwalls, and you won't see them for 5 years.
Yeah, but that's because they've got other responsibilities, and they need to clock in just to keep a hand into their into what they were doing.
They want to remember what they used to do.
That's right. Yeah. And when they go, they really enjoy it, and it's keeping that rock and roll thing, you know.
He used to be on a rocking scene. She used to run a disco night called Car Wash.
I remember Car Wash. That was at Bagley's, wasn't it?
No, it was at Leicester Square, and it was at Maximus.
Oh, Maximus, gosh.
She used to be on the rocking scene, and she's still on the rocking scene.
What's her name?
You know, I can't remember. Blonde hair, little girl.
There's lots like that.
Yeah. Anyway, but I remember clocking in. I remember seeing her there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, you know, I didn't know you were into rocking thing. And she said, yeah, I've been into it for years. Yeah. And I was like, my God, I've never seen you on a rocking scene before. And I was literally just clocking in.
Clocking in.
I realised that I was coming to have a look what was going on.
Yeah.
And there were some new faces there. DJ Go.
DJ Go from Tokyo.
A young girl from Tokyo. Hold on. I'm getting interrupted here. And what were you doing at the time?
Well, I'll tell you what happened to me. I did a number of clubs. I did Ruby's, and I did a Revolution Club before that. I did kind of a lot of guest spots.
You did
spots.
Ruby's?
Do you remember Ruby's in Carnaby Street?
I used to run that club.
Well, I used to do a club there.
I used to run it.
There you go.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, well, I did a number of clubs, and they were kind of all failures, really. I think because... I didn't fit into the jive thing. I didn't fit into the rockabilly thing. I didn't fit into the Lindy Hop thing. I didn't fit into anything because I was playing really kind of weird and obscure stuff of all the periods. So people kind of branded me as more, he's a jive DJ. Oh no, he's only a rockabilly DJ. Oh no, he's only a blues DJ. Or no, he's only swing. And I'm like, well, actually, I'm everything. I'm music man.
So take us we're into 95 now.
Yeah,
at that point,
I'm going to get to it, because at that point, I gave up, and I just thought, you know what, bleep, 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 bleep everybody, because no one's interested.
In 95, gave up.
I gave up. I gave up actually having a club where people were interested in about good music, and then I just thought, you know what, no one's interested. I'm on my own. There's a few mates and that's about it. So I'm going to put all my records under my bed. Well, I couldn't fit them under my bed, but I put them away, and I didn't DJ for 5 years. And 5 years later, I started to do a couple of kind of one-off guest things here for people.
And I was just not interested in anything.
No, you don't. You get depressed, don't you?
And I think it's probably the same time as you, though.
Yeah, I think... just before then, actually, I did get involved with, do you remember Murphy? Paul Murphy.
Yeah, I remember Paul Murphy.
Well, I did a couple of things with him. He did the last watering hole at the 100 Club on a Friday, yeah. Which is all jazz, all jazz-based. And then we did a little thing called the Cat Club.
And that rings a bell,
the Cat Club. It was actually an illegal drinking den.
There was a lot of those in the 90s,
well,
wasn't
there? Was, a lot of those.
Especially in Soho, a lot of blues clubs.
This was Finchley Road, and it was just a door. No one knew you were there unless you kind of knew about it.
Yeah.
And we'd go on all night.
It was like 90s speakeasy.
It was a complete speakeasy. We got busted so many
times. Do you know the
times.
Password at the door? Yeah.
Originally, it was just kind of medallion men and prostitutes in there and junkies.
Yeah, that's what all the blues clubs were like.
And we were playing obscure jazz, obscure blues. I used to be more on the blues circuit, and Paul used to play more of the jazz stuff, and it thrown in with a bit of rock and roll. And then eventually, we had an all-dayer there, and Rohan DJed, I think Mousy DJed.
Wow.
It was a one-off thing. It got completely mobbed, and then it got shut down.
Oh, my God. And you know, when did Lady Luck start?
Well, Lady Luck started about 2001, I think it was. And it really started off with Jake and Ronnie. You know, I mean, they've been into the kind of stuff that I've been into.
But he wasn't Jake Vegas all the time.
No, Rocky.
Yeah.
Rocky.
Rocky used to come around the house, see my mum and dad.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Rocky goes way back. He goes
back
as
the
far.
80s.
Yeah, he goes back as far as I do, and all of
he was
us,
mates
really.
With Fagan and that.
Yeah, well, originally he was. He grew up with Matt
Jake.
West,
just
Matt
remember,
West.
Jake Vegas is actually Rocky.
Call him Rocky. Rocky. And it was kind of like, you know, we were all bored. Basically, there was a whole bunch of us, you know, we didn't fit into any of these kind of so-called scenes, although we used to go because it was the closest thing we can find musically. But we were kind of more like, you know, we've kind of grown out of this high school hop thing of dressing very rockabilly, and we kind of were wearing more like the Frank Sinatra or the 40s, 50s, early 50s suits. Kind of hats, long overcoats, you know, kind of adult.
So it was a lizard lounge look.
Kind of lizard lounge look.
That sort of Las Vegas grind. Yeah.
You know, sleaze and tees. Yeah.
So when did, you know, Lady Luck started 2001. When did you bring the burlesque thing into it? I mean,
At Secrets. Well, it started at the Masters, and the Masters lasted sort of 3 months, and it got flooded, and it was a strip joint. It was in the basement of a strip joint in Soho.
Oh, amazing.
That got flooded. Then Jake found another club called Secrets.
Another strip joint.
Well, the guy that ran the Masters said, look, there's another place called Secrets. They got a basement. If you guys want to rent it out, go down there, check it out. And it was literally like, you know, a full-on strip club upstairs. And downstairs had his basement, which we basically made it our home for 3 years.
Yeah.
And it started off down there on a Friday night. And we would just take over, and we would have a band playing, and it could be any kind of band, from somebody playing raw blues to jungle rhythm bongos to a rockabilly outfit to a mambo thing. And then we would have what we used to do, actually, originally. We didn't really have burlesque as such. What we used to do, we used to go upstairs, and we used to get a couple of the girls that used to strip for us upstairs to come downstairs and do a couple of strip numbers on the stage as a pole there. And we used to pay them a certain fee. Can you dance to some old music? I'm going to play the records. It's going to be sleazy and bluesy. Do your thing on stage. And they go, do you want it full hog? And I went, I want it right down the line all the way. And this went on for about six months. And then there was a few people that I knew from the fetch scene, because I used to DJ on the fetch scene with Torch Garden
and that.
And, you know, all great guys. And they kind of crossed over to the kind of music that I was playing, which is kind of obscure.
I think we
stuff.
All went down that scene.
Exactly.
A little bit.
So they used to support, you know, they used to support Lady Luck, because they were the people that used to come, you know. And eventually the word got out that there's this new club, it's in a strip joint, they're playing really kind of more aggressive, more weirder stuff of the periods, but really across the board, very speakeasy kind of vibe. And the people that used to go to Torture Garden, the performers, used to come down. Now, a lot of them are performers, and they used to say to me, look, why don't we do a show for you? Because, of course, we are open to everything. And then we got a few people, and they did proper burlesque shows. you know, which was more oriented around the 40s.
And this is probably well before burlesque shows kicked off in the
States. This is before anyone knew what the word was.
Well, burlesque was a 50s sort of undercover theatre thing.
Goes back to the music halls, really, yeah, you know, yeah. Back to kind of the early 19th century, really, you know, where it became a, you know, you could be a puppeteer and that's a burlesque show, or you could be a poet and you're a burlesque show.
Yeah.
So it's not
about
nipple tassling.
But we're talking about
the
Vegas
grind burlesque thing, nipple tassling.
That was a 50s sort of.
Yeah, that's the 40s, 50s thing, and that's what Lady Luck started. Lady Luck was never about burlesque, and it was never about the music. It was about a vibe of a night, or an alternative night out of a melting pot of music.
And it was a mixture of people, from what I understand. So you got
it created a new thing.
People coming into the scene, or it coming into that sound.
Yeah.
And they weren't necessarily rocking or anything.
No,
not at all. There was people dress up for the night.
Well, we had mods coming down. We would have skinheads coming down. We'd have pop artists coming down. We would have DJs checking out the samples.
I've got friends who used to go to the club when it was in the earlier days.
But unfortunately...
Did you do something up in King's Cross for a bit? Was there a basement in King's Cross? Or was it just a secret?
No, it was just a secret to start. That was the birth of it, really.
And where did it go at that point?
Well,
how did it develop?
It grew. The word got out. It grew. And that when you grow, as you know, you lose some and you win some.
Okay, so we're gonna hopefully play something on that tip. Yeah, we're gonna play something on that tip.
I think we should play something on the burlesque thing or crime.
Why not?
Well, I think we should go for The Man with the Golden Arm.
The Man with the Golden Arm.
Just listen to the song. Listen to the music. Let's do it.
Bit of grind there, definitely. I mean, you talked about the burlesque thing, and were you the only club in London at the time doing burlesque? Or?
I think at the time we were the only club doing burlesque. If there was another club, I didn't know about it, and And I kind of knew what was really kind of going on around the circuit, really.
Yeah. And what about the States? Has burlesque become popular at the time?
Burlesque has always been there. No, burlesque has
always been there.
If you go to LA, there's like, you know, I think they have conventions, they have all kinds of stuff, and, you know, they've got some great theatres there that they do it in and stuff. But you know what they lose, and I think even today they've lost it, is the fact that burlesque has become a bit like...
It's a housewife choice, isn't it?
It's a little bit like that. Unfortunately, it's lost the element of darkness again, like we were talking earlier on about music and stuff. And
I think it's lost its direction. I think there's too many people into it.
There's too many drama students into
it. I mean, men can't get into it, really. But
they
women,
can, yeah, if they want to. There is a couple of burlesque
I know,
men.
I know, I've seen that. I've not heard about that one personally. But, But I think for me, burlesque is the nipple tassel swinging burlesque clubs
well, that,
of the 1950s.
That is the...
And if you're going to try and recreate that...
How many times can you do that?
You can't.
That's what I'm saying to you.
And you have to do modern burlesque.
It's like, how many times can you play the same record? You can't.
You do have to do modern burlesque. And I think, you know, modern burlesque comes in a lot of different ways.
Well, it does. But I think the burlesque direct... Well, we might have been, let's say, one of the first people to do burlesque, integrated it into a music club. But we did it with... an accessory to the night as part of the night, not because like we are a burlesque or we are just rockabilly or we are just blues. We did it as part of a vibe, you know, and creating a sort of speakeasy alternative night out where people can just have a, you know, something on the dark side, something on the light side, and something in the middle, you know, and that's what it was, really.
Sure.
And I think burlesque now has just gone too mainstream with kind of drama students thinking, well, we can all do this.
It ain't kinky anymore.
It's not creative.
I don't know if it was creative and kinky at one point, but I think now it's become, as you say, mainstream.
Yeah,
it's become a bit bland.
It's very bland. I'm afraid to say it, and I don't want to say it, but it has, and that's why Lady Luck has shied away a little bit from burlesque. And now, if I have burlesque, it's kind of like I'm really particular.
No, it's understandable.
You know,
I think you've got to get top acts on at the club.
Well, I think
and
you
I think
top
you've
acts,
got to look.
Sure.
You've got to look at the right acts to give you the right impression to the punters who are actually coming to the club to enjoy themselves.
I agree. I tell you what I found though, going on to the burlesque thing, is that I found Lady Luck has become maybe not like what people might expect as a burlesque club, but it caters for people that are into burlesque as a night out. Not necessarily going to see a burlesque show. So it's for people who want to get dressed up. They've just, you know, bought
and look, and look the
they
part.
Look amazing. Yeah. You know, everybody's like dolled up to the eyes, you know, and I've got to say...
And there's me going to your clubs in jeans and a t-shirt.
Well, and because you're the preacher man.
I'm the preacher.
I'm the preacher man.
I'm the preacher. No, but... I know you. I was lucky enough to meet last year a young lady who you've known for a long time, who's a big star of burlesque. You know, how did that all happen?
You're talking about Dita Von Teese.
Yeah.
Okay. Dita. We kind of met through a mutual friend, and I don't know. I guess it must be before she was actually big. You know, before she married Marilyn Manson, she came over to London and she did a show, and she did it at Torture Garden. And Torture Garden was really, to me, the first people to bring over a burlesque artiste.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't really go down that brilliantly. Nobody even knew what burlesque was because they're used to kind of like, you know, a bit more on the hard edge of fetish shows, and then there's two girls doing burlesque, you know, very kind of pretty, sort of like cheesecakey kind of vibe, and no one really got it. So that kind of was like the beginning, I guess. She's the kind of, I suppose, the role model for a lot of women today, in the fashion world as well, you know, going to fashion and stuff. But I would say she's probably the top end of it all, you know, and she knows how to do it. She does it traditionally. She doesn't try to sort of think, I'm this and I'm that. It's all done kind of like the original way, really.
I think that's enough on burlesque.
Let's forget burlesque. Let's talk about rock and roll, man.
We don't want to talk no more about ladies.
Too many ladies in the house.
No, too many ladies in the house. No, let's talk about the DJs at Lady Luck. I mean, you've got Jake Vegas there, and who else did came on in the early days with you?
Well, actually, originally, in the early days, it was myself, Jake Vegas, and Ronnie King, and Ian Johnson. Ian used to do the warm-up session, playing more kind of like Las Vegas jazz and stuff. Ronnie used to come on and he used to play kind of a mixture of R&B and a bit of blues. And Jake takes it everywhere. You never know where he's going to be, and it's all good. And I used to do the last... Well, actually, I used to do like the last 3 hours in those days. And it was, you know, it was hard slog. But I used to be able to play, you know, I had a lot of time to play what I wanted. So that went on.
I think
for
that's
quite a
really exciting when you DJ, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, it's amazing. You're in another world.
If you get a couple of hours slot,
a couple of hours, you can really go right around the world.
You can really do what you want to do.
It's amazing, and also it was the days where.
They
were the main DJs, and then every now and again we'd have a guest DJ. You know, bring someone in. We had Mousy. We've had Cosmic Keith.
Yeah.
We've had Buddy Mara from Italy, and Lady Kamikaze,
from Japan.
Lady Kamikaze came over, I guess, for the rock and roll scene. You know, like most people come into London because of the rock and roll scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them stay, some of them don't. Some of them stay and get married and so forth. It becomes history, you know.
That's it.
Like many people I know that have met through Lady Luck and got married.
Wild.
I think that's great.
Isn't that amazing? They'll be thinking about going, where the hell is DJ El Nino?
El Nino. I've got him to blame.
So anyway, we're going to play another track.
Okay.
And I want to think about Jake and your early DJs.
Sure.
And think about what you were into then.
Yeah. Well, I think on this note, Mr. Preacher Man, we need to go gospel. We need to go to church.
If you want to do a church track, that's fine.
Can we do a church
Hallelujah.
Track?
Hallelujah.
Yeah?
Hallelujah.
Okay, this is called Didn't It Rain? And it's a classic gospel record, but it's got a rocking beat. So let's do it. Didn't It Rain? Church music for you there.
Well, church, gospel.
Gospel, church.
Same thing. Blues, blues.
Roots.
Rocking.
Rock and roll. It's all good.
It's all good. All good stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, Lady Luck's gone for a while now, and you've got the Black Cotton Club, which is doing a sort of roots, sort of 20s, 30s sound, 40s sound. You know, where is it all going for you now? What about Lady Luck? It's been running for a while now. Do you see it running for longer, or do you see it expanding into different? Or you're looking at where's Lady Luck going now?
Well, Lady Luck, it's been going 8 years now, and you know, like most underground clubs, are kind of fold away after a year, let's say, or they do it like once a year or once every 6 months to sustain it and keep it. Where you know, for the first 3 or 4 years, we did it every week. But there was no other club like it at that time. And now there's like, well, there's so many carbon copies or influences. We influence a lot of clubs in London at the moment.
Sure.
Although, you know, we're probably, should we say, the first of that type. So most people that would either go to a club that's similar to mine will find out about Lady Luck in some way or another. Sooner or later, they will. I think if Lady Luck was going to kind of, I don't know, fizzle out, I guess, it would have done it by now. So I feel it's sustained and established its little market, and I think for people that want an alternative vintage night out, it's the place to go.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you got people who are off various scenes there, dressing up for the part and enjoying themselves.
Well, for some people it's a lifestyle, for some people it's an escape. It doesn't matter. You know, either way, you're listening to good music.
That's it.
You know, we've got a couple of rooms. You know, one room sort of does slightly more earlier stuff. We play 45s and 78s. We have guest DJs, you know, we have, you know, Snakester plays there, Lady Kamikaze play, and we've got so many, you know, you've even played there.
I have, so that, I admit you, you know, it, undercover though.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, it's all good at the end of the day, and there's no rules, do you know what I mean? We don't have the barriers, and the whole point, it's supposed to be a melting pot.
Yeah, I think you can play, if you really wanted to play cheesy rock and roll, you could actually
you can
play it there.
Yeah, of course you can. Or hardcore, whatever you want to do.
Whereas in certain, you could play
whatever you
hardcore
want.
Rockabilly or whatever.
Whatever.
But I think where there are clubs out there where you don't have that flexibility because you've got the certain type of crowd going for a certain type of music, and it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, well, I think.
But it's good. It's good that Lady Luck is allowing that to happen.
Well, it's opening the doors for a lot of different things, I think.
Totally agree.
You know, it's also you know, open to a lot of doors of different bands. You know, the only thing we ask with Lady Luck is like, don't turn up as if like you just come off a building site.
Yeah,
you know, there's a policy, but that's
you
the only policy.
You gotta
make
dress
an effort,
up.
You know, all these clothes that people collected through the years, where do they wear them?
I don't know.
They should be wearing them.
Where are all these clothes? Where are all the Ricardos?
They've all got them in their musty wardrobes.
Where are all the Ricardos and the Gab jackets?
Bring them my way.
Bring them my way too. Yeah. PM me. No, but seriously, you've got your three CDs out for Lady Luck, and you've got another CD out for Black Cotton Club, and people can get them via ladyluck.co.uk.
That's right. They can get them on the website, and they can, you know, pay by PayPal on there, and we're going to have Volume 4 out this year as well, and Volume 2 of Black Cotton. We're doing the London Thames Festival, which we've been doing.
Oh, of course, you've been doing the London Thames Festival
for the last 4 or 5 years now.
Right.
You know, which is a great exposure, and it's the biggest festival in London.
And when's that?
In September. That's in September. And last year, we did like a little weekender where you had the Black Cotton on the Friday. You'd go to the weekender in the daytime, which is free. And then in the evening, we'd have a Lady Luck Club. And then we'll go back on the festival, which is free again, on the Sunday. So you'd have 4 days of continuous music, but right across the board.
Yeah.
From like hillbilly to jazz, swing, blues, rockabilly, bop, whatever, anything. All vintage, though. All retro, you know, whatever you want to call it. So hopefully we can repeat that this year again. And the response has been really good. I mean, my only thing, I guess I'd like to kind of maybe maybe like bring Lady Luck a further afield in other countries, and you know, even DJ in other places that I've never been to, which would be great.
It would be great to do some stuff in the States. I mean,
it'd be great.
Do a Lady
Japan
Luck
as well. Well, that'd be great.
Yeah, or Japan. Lady Luck in New York. Lady Luck in LA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lady Luck in Japan. You know, Tokyo.
So anyone listening out there that want to bring us over, man, get in touch. Get in touch. You won't be disappointed. You can check our website out. You can check out everything we do.
No, you're good PR, man.
I know.
Thanks for coming on the show, Nino.
Thank you for having us, Mr. Preacher, man.
It's great you've got a great knowledge and a great mind. And you do
I'm bursting at the seams here. But actually,
You deliver a lot of information.
So I'm a man of walking information, but none of it is any good.
Thanks to Lady Kamikaze coming on the show, even though she didn't say very much. But
she had lots of smiles. Before wind it down and take it home. I'm just going to tell you a quick brief about the next track, actually, because
this is a track you're going to play us out with.
Well, I'm going to play you out with this track, and it was a 40-second verse from 1929, and it's called Black Betty, which a lot of people have covered this song. I mean, there's rock versions of
funk records,
funk versions,
yeah.
And this particular version
Black Betty.
That's the one.
Black Betty,
Ram-a-lam. This is a version where Tony Diavolo from the guitarist from Number Nine.
Tony Diavolo.
Does all my artwork. Number one man. If you ever want any artwork similar to ours or even better, don't tell him that. Get in touch with him because he's great. We put this together. We put the backing on this, and this is like modern. What do you call it? I don't know what you call this when you're kind of like sampling.
Well, the first sampling stuff. Sampling's been done for years.
For years, yeah.
I guess before hip hop, really.
Exactly. So I mean, this
breakbeat.
I don't really know, but this is a track that we felt that needed. Enhancing because there was no music to it at all originally.
Yeah.
So everything you hear in the background has been put on, except for the guitar break, is being put on by cutting original old music. Like you'll hear Miles Davis, you'll hear Johnny Lee Hooker, you'll hear Lightning Hopkins on there. You know, you'll hear all kinds of stuff if you listen, if you know the records, and it's just been put on the backing of this original gospel verse, and it's called, we call it the Dark Black Betty.
Oh, Black Betty, lamb the lamb, oh, Black Betty, lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby, lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby, lamb the lamb, them things gone crazy, lamb the lamb, them things gone crazy, lamb the lamb, oh, Black Betty, lamb the lamb, oh, Black Betty. Lamb the lamb, oh, Black Betty. Lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby. Lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby. Lamb the lamb, them things gone crazy. Lamb the lamb, them things gone crazy. Lamb the lamb, oh, Black Betty. 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 Lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby. Lamb the lamb, Black Betty had a baby. Damn the lamb, them things gon' pay. Damn the lamb, oh, Black Betty. Damn the lamb, oh.
gonna pay you. Down the lamb, fall black belly. Down the lamb, fall black belly. Down the lamb, damn thing gonna pay you. Down the lamb, fall black belly. Down the lamb.
Sweet Susie, she'll beat you to death. Sweet Susie, from Russ Meyer, the director who gave you Vixen and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. For a taste of evil, Sweet Susie, a woman too much for one man. Sweet Susie, the diary of a wicked lady, the memoirs of a bad girl. Sweet Susie, no man escaped her island or her whip. Sweet Susie, slamming, crashing, banging action from opening scene to mind-bending climax. Sweet Susie, she ain't no lady. This motion picture's rated R.
This is DJ El Nino, and you've been listening to The Preacher on your Hillbilly Radio.